Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story, we break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been a fun Friday. We hope you are safe. And we start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey!
We are at home today, and we are having a lot of fun coming off of this snow today, this morning. Mike, I just went outside because I keep checking back out. I'm like, what's going on now? Now the wind has picked up, and I guess, you know, this is where the meteorologists were telling us, oh, yeah, we're going to get this slushy stuff and this sleet, and this is when it's going to freeze over overnight again. And as you said, and we just heard Steve Koonin talk about tomorrow, the Hawks are supposed to play the Rockets. Both teams are right back from, you know, being in town. But I don't know, man. I mean, like, again, you got to have people being able to get on the roads and get there.
Yeah, that's the thing. And by the way, while we've been doing this radio show from home, kind of like shades of back when we were working at home during COVID, yeah. I just broke out a nice tall glass of Maker's Mark. And my wife, worried about the freezing conditions, has just cleaned the driveway using a shovel. She's taking all the slush and snow. Yes, how about that? She grew up on a farm. So Becky's been doing all that while you and I were talking to Steve Koonin. How about them apples? Winter storm warning still in effect, as Carl said, till Saturday. Some really cool video from Piedmont Park, where people are, they created some moguls. Guys are actually taking jumps in Piedmont Park right off at 10th. And you saw Georgia Tech guys are skiing, and guys, some video folks doing some cross-country skiing type stuff on Peachtree.
That's crazy.
You brought this up earlier. And then, you know, you get on a plane, you're flying to Minneapolis, you know, you probably, maybe you took your shoes off or you're getting comfortable, start taxiing. Next thing you know, the flight, they got a problem with an engine. Luckily, only four people, mild injuries. But you mentioned earlier, a Delta plane had to abort a takeoff down at Hartsfield-Jackson. And all of a sudden, now you're in the snow out there on the runway.
Yeah, the footage is out there. I mean, you'll probably see it if you're watching the news or something to stay up on the weather. But, yeah, I mean, it's just not what you were hoping for. And Delta did a good job, and everybody's safe, thank goodness. But, yeah, man, I mean, this is why, you know, you don't take these weather events for granted. And speaking of drinking, Michelle told me to tell you thanks for the smoke wagon.
Isn't that something good?
She just made, what is this called? I don't know. So what is this? Some kind of drink. Cider and what? Apple cider, bitters, and lemon with this smoke wagon. Mike, it's delicious.
Yeah. Dude, I had that at a Cosmo in Vegas about a year ago. That was Carl's Christmas gift. Take it behind the. I know you how much you love your whiskeys and your bourbons, but that stuff is money, man.
Good. So thank you. So we are in the same boat when it comes to a cocktail. It is 5 o'clock somewhere, and it's 5 o'clock on our show. Let's talk about our Falcons. You're going to hear from AA Alex Anthopoulos. If you're just joining us, we've spent a lot of time today on the game last night, and we'll talk more about Ohio State and Texas tonight, because that's where we're going to get a chance to watch college football playoff. This hour is brought to you by our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings. It's Friday, guys, and of course, it's happy hour now and every Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 at Buffalo Wild Wings. We talk about this process. I don't know exactly what this entails, okay? And I'm not taking a shot at the Falcons. There's no reason to. We didn't get in the playoffs. It is what it is. But when you talk about trusting and moving forward with this process with the front office and this evaluation stuff that they have going on, and every organization does it, I'm simply asking you, do you trust it? Mike, it hasn't produced enough winning for me to say, yes, I believe in whatever this process is that we're doing, specifically on the defensive side. Why is it that we can't seemingly find the pieces and do the things we want to do on that side of the ball? Even when Matt Ryan was our quarterback for all those years, he never played with a top five defense. So we can talk about the greatness of Ryan and how they found those pieces and traded for Tony Gonzalez, etc. But at the end of the day, this process, where we are over the last 7 years, has not been able to produce that. And so when I say, hey, should Terry Fontenot be afraid of you know, potentially being scrutinized or his job security? He was asked that question at the presser, and I want you to hear it, and then I want you to answer this. Here's Fontenot saying, I am not worried about my job security.
I just don't think, and that's not coming from an arrogant place. I just don't think about that. Sure. You know, I don't think, I believe my job is to come in every day and be as effective as I can. I don't think about my mortality or my job security and things like that and worry about, I worry more about doing the very best I can. I know it's an honor and a privilege to be in this role, and I just want to come in and do the very best I can to affect winning, and that's what I think about.
Now, Mike, I commend you for that. He shouldn't worry about that. You come in, you do your job. Unless you're terrible at your job.
You can't do your job scared. Right.
No.
Right.
So I get that. And I respect what he's saying. But this process, do you trust it? Do you trust where we're headed?
You asked me this to start the show, and for guys that are in their cars now just hanging out with us all day, appreciate you. I trust like half the process. You know, it's kind of, it's a very similar to Thomas Dimitroff, in the sense that Dimitroff was so good at the skilled position, the flashy offensive pieces, but we struggled on the defensive side. We struggled on the trenches until 16. The 2016 draft, I'll always give Thomas credit, and whether Dan Quinn was driving the bus on that, but getting three rookies to start and impact the team. But other than that, we just always seem to struggle to get the quarterback on the ground. And I think in the same case goes for Fontenot. We've got Bijan. We've got Drake London. You know, however we got there, right or wrong, we got Penix, and he's ready to roll. But man, this defense is not good. It's second to last in sacks. We looked disorganized at times. I still think Jimmy Lake needs to go. I was also, when we're talking to Brian McFadden, you'll hear that conversation coming up later in six. I'm serious. I think Terry should just take over the defense. Because if Terry was involved in it and we got better getting the quarterback on there. Now, granted, mixed results, certainly like that Keystone Cops stuff in Minnesota and whatever the hell that was against Carolina with the season on the line. But I would move on from Jimmy Lake, and that is still part of Terry's, you know, job is to put everything together. I know Raheem puts his staff together, but Terry could lean on him, you could argue. But do you trust Terry to find us some edge rush, to get these defensive pieces, whether free agency, limited as we are going to be in the cap as well?
So right now he's yet to do that. Right. They have attempted to bring in some pass rush, and again, Arnold Ebiketie is the guy that you could say, okay, we hoped had high expectations for him. He's not been an elite pass rusher, but we just don't have that guy on this roster. Mike, I know that Terry's background is pro personnel. It is guys in the league and then finding how those guys could fit with your team and bringing them in. He did a hell of a job of that with the New Orleans Saints. All those years that the Saints were really good guys, going back 17, 18, 19, where they were on the cusp of getting to a Super Bowl, Terry's there. Mm-hmm. And the point is, recognizing those kinds of players, which is why he took a chance on Justin Simmons, why he took a chance on Judon, made sense. But when you talk about the draft, that's a big picture, bigger picture kind of deal. And it also entails you as a GM not just trusting your instincts, but recognizing how you're going to use these individuals. We talk about this all the time, Mike. I'm going to draft the best guy. Sometimes it's not the best guy. Jared Verse, and you mentioned this all offseason, and I said the best edge rusher was Latu. He goes higher than Verse. Verse's team is going to the playoffs, and I think he had a better year. How did he fit into what the Rams wanted to do? That is the vision of a guy like Les Snead versus what we're dealing with right now. Terry has an opportunity to prove this to us in this upcoming draft. But, Mike, right now, when you talk about the process, it's just not producing enough winning.
No, man. Look, Ruka Roho, we like what he's brought, and hopefully he becomes a guy we'll be talking about, and we can say, hey, man. But, I mean, how many times as Falcon fans do we have to draft a guy and, well, he's developing? Now, how about just step into the job and be the rock star, right? Right? I mean, on the offense, we pretty much know these guys. Even though Pitts backslid, he was a Pro Bowler in year one with Matt Ryan. But, I mean, like, I don't know. Braylon Trice is hurt. I'm excited about Braylon Trice. D-led through cold water all over that with us on Wednesday. Brandon Dorlis, we'll see what he can do. You know, I mean, Rook, it was a reach. Rook was described by everybody as a reach. NFL Network, ESPN, potential, yes. You're not in a position to be cute with potential. Same thing goes for my second favorite argument about our general manager, Troy Andersen. You had 2 second-round draft picks. You picked up Ebba Cady, and then you could have got Nick Benito, and you went for Troy Andersen. He can't stay healthy. Now, Ebba Cady looks solid, if not spectacular, but we just don't. Richie Grant. Richie Grant's probably, I don't know if he's even going to be on this team. D'Angelo Malone has not been an impact guy. That's a third-round pick. Now, unless you guys say, well, everything out of the first. No, you've got to hit on this. And you just mentioned Les Snead. Les Snead with Raheem Morris 2 years ago went and got some studs, and they added more studs. Braden Fisk and Jared Verse. I mean, these guys are rock stars, and we're doing projects? We're bringing, like, cute picks like Troy Andersen and Ruka Roro? I don't get it. That's why when you ask me, I don't trust his defensive process.
Do you? 404-726-0929. He will get another opportunity to prove us wrong and to make our team better. I hope he does. We're not rooting against Terry. He's for us. He's here. He's trying to help. But it just hasn't been good enough. And he owned it at his press conference. I've been arguing all day with Eddie. Well, I don't even want to say his last Twitter handle. But Eddie Long. Okay. And I've been arguing with him. You can go see it at Duke's. I put him up, see Duke's. But he's been arguing with me about Kyle Pitts because I put out there about the fact that, you know, Brock Bowers was first team all pro. First team, guys. It is the top of the toppest honor that you could possibly be acknowledged for. He is the best tight end, and he's a rookie. And I said that Pitts hasn't ever done this in his 4 years. And so Eddie Long, whatever his last name is, has been talking to me about this and fussing with me about it. And, Mike, it just gets back to, you're right, the development, the process of, hey, we're developing guys. Some guys they come in and they're ready. And other guys you need to develop. And then other guys just aren't that damn good. And sometimes you got to recognize that, too. 404-726-0929. We're going to take a quick break. We're coming back. Alex Anthopoulos stopped by the show yesterday. We were at Twin Peaks to get us caught up on all the Brave stuff. And if you're wondering, well, what's our starting pitching look like? Guys, spring training is just 5 weeks away. I know there's snow on the ground, but believe it or not, we're going to be talking baseball here once we get to February, and our team will be reporting pitchers and catchers. We will hear from Alex Anthopoulos next.
And then the guy we're about to talk to, I think he's the best in the business, and I've said that to him publicly and privately. He joins us now here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Alex Anthopoulos, a couple of things to mention, by the way, for the Braves. They avoid arbitration on a couple of guys, and we'll get to that. Alex, first and foremost, how are you doing?
Doing well, guys. Glad to be on.
Thank you so much. Let's talk about this offseason. A question we continue to get, Alex, is are we going to add to this pitching staff? Obviously, Braves fans seeing pitchers around the league end up in various spots. We know about the Max Fried situation as he goes to a different team. And, you know, congratulations to him. But what are we going to attempt to do to improve our pitching?
Yeah, so we've definitely had some, you know, conversations, free agency and trade for rotation. I think the thing for us is Strider looks like he's going to be back sooner rather than later. He's going to have a normal spring training. You know, we're not going to put him on the opening day roster, but you know, he'll appear in spring training games. So right now he's doing well, and even though he won't be on the opening day roster, we don't think it'll be too far beyond that. Again, we'll probably have a more definitive date as we get to mid-March, late March. But you start factoring in Strider, in whatever order you want to put it in, Strider, Sale, Lopez, Schwellenbach, those four. You know, whoever we add from the outside for us has to be someone clearly better than Ian Anderson, who's out of options. He's got to make the team. And
right.
Look, I know we haven't thought about Ian Anderson much, but you know, in 2020 he was our number two starter. We went to Game 7 of the CS. In 2021, when they won the World Series, he was our number three starter. I mean, we're talking about filling that fifth starter spot. Now we want five great starters, but you know, to throw him away. And I'm not saying, you know, he still has to make the team and so on, but he's had a normal offseason. Guy was a top five pick in the draft. He's still young. And he has every opportunity to come in and make that team. Now, if we can go get a frontline guy, and that means Ian's got to be in the bullpen as a long guy and so on, we'll do that. But, you know, the other guy is Grant Holmes. I know it was only 7 starts, but we like the stuff quite a bit. So we've been active. We obviously haven't gotten anything done, but the bar is high for us, you know. We're not looking to get a back end guy and so on. We'd like to get someone that we'd feel pretty good could slot in with those other four. You know, any one of those four, we'd be excited about starting a playoff game. So I think if you see us add, most likely it'd be someone that we felt pretty good taking the ball in a playoff game, because they would ultimately be blocking Anderson and Holmes and some of the other kids. Mm.
It is the general manager, Alex Anthopoulos, of your Atlanta Braves. Dukes and Bell, we're live at Twin Peaks in Bunkin', getting ready for the national semifinal tonight, Penn State, Notre Dame. We'll ask Alex his football picks later, even though he's from Canada. Alex, the bullpen.
How are you feeling about your 7 years?
I know, for breaking your chops. How are you feeling about your bullpen? Are there pending moves there?
Yeah, I mean, the loss of Joe Jimenez is significant. You know, it's definitely significant, and we've had conversations about late-inning relief. So, you know, internally, Deisbel Hernandez was up and down the majority of the year, but at the end, Snit was going to him in big-time spots. And I remember one game, I think it was a Sunday game against the Marlins, bases loaded. Season's on the line every game at that point. Mets were playing at night against the Phillies. And he brought in Deisbel Hernandez, you know, and we had Joe and we had Pierce and we had other right-handers, but he really threw the ball well. So you know, I do expect him to take on more of a role. He's still got to earn it. He's got options and stick, but we'd love to have more depth. But look, we had a really good bullpen last year, a really deep bullpen. And Joe right now, at best, it's back at the All-Star break. It could be where he misses the season, and he's back in 26. So as we get closer, we'll know a little more, but again, if we think that there's something there where we can improve that depth, get someone we think would be an upgrade over Deisbel, and Deisbel could be a guy to compete for the spot in the pen or be optioned, we look to do that as well.
Alex, the decision on Charlie, how difficult was that to allow him to, you know, hey, we're not bringing you back? I had heard that he wanted to maybe come back here. I don't know if that was necessarily true. Talk about that decision.
Yeah, I want to be careful just to respect him, but no, he's been great. And look, he made a great choice with the Orioles. One, it's a contending team. They've won the division. They've made the postseason. Drew French was our bullpen coach here. He's now the pitching coach there. This is year two for him, so there's familiarity and relationships there. And Sarasota is close to home for spring training, so it made a whole lot of sense. We spoke. We definitely had conversations early in the winter. I think ultimately, you know, for us, with where the contract went, and, you know, Charlie deserves it. He's been amazing for us. But I think, you know, you look at, you know, the contract that he got and blocking Anderson, blocking Holmes, you know, weighing all those things together, you know, ultimately, you know, I think, you know, it ended up working out for him that he ended up with the Orioles. But it's tough because that guy's been incredible. He's been a great teammate. You know, it's tough. There's things behind the scenes that no one sees where he helped a Max Fried, he helped a Schwellenbach, he's helped a Strider. The little conversations about grips or about your routine or taking care of yourself or how you attack guys, that's really, really valuable. But the hope is that all the time that he did spend here, all the time that he spent around these guys, they've now learned and they can continue to pay that forward. But I think the one for us is that it was really tough is just, you know, blocking, you know, putting Holmes and Anderson in the bullpen because they're both out of options. You can't send them to Gwinnett. You can't leave them there as depth. You know, again, the bar is high for us to block those guys because they're young guys. We've got them under club control for 6 more years for Holmes, 4 more years for Ian Anderson, and specifically Anderson because he's been such a big part of the team. Again, didn't have a great year, was rehabbing the whole way, came back in the middle, was just so-so-ing Gwinnett, never really got going. But we do believe a normal offseason for him coming into spring training. I'm excited about what we're going to see. This was a big-time guy for us. And now because we've built so much high-end depth with the other four I brought up, I mean, you know, you think about 2-3 years ago, we talked about Ian Anderson being our fifth starter. So that's a really good rotation. Now, he's got to earn it, and he's got to, you know, earn that rotation spot. And, you know, there's still a scenario that we do make a trade. We do sign someone. So, signings have been slow. There's been a bunch of activity, but it won't surprise me if signings kick into February the way it's going. It has been slow.
Okay, I was going to say, because it has been slow for the Braves, this hot stove league, but I know you always, we joke around that you shop with a Groupon, and you always get the value. Chris Sale's one of the most brilliant, you know, strokes from a general manager we've seen in a while. It's Alex Anthopoulos with this guy's Falcons GM. What he have to say, you'll hear that coming up at the top of the hour. The 7-8-9 spot has been such a strong suit, and I know last year Alex threw it all out because the injuries just killed us, but are you getting enough from the shortstop position, or are you getting enough from the catcher position as far as the plate?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt Sean Murphy and Orlando did not have the seasons they were capable of last year. you know, with the injuries, what happened was everything was exacerbated. You had Orlando Arcia hitting fifth a bunch of times last year. And again, that's not to be critical of Snit. That's because that's the roster I gave him. That's the depth that we had. And we weren't positioned to overcome that. Eventually, we pieced it together. But, you know, we've had such great offensive teams for years now. And last year was a step back. And really, other than Ozuna, everyone took a step back. And now part of it was the injuries. Part of it was slow starts. But the way the offense was designed is, you know, for guys to hit more, like you said, to the bottom of the lineup. And if everyone else is healthy and durable like they have been in their career, you look at the back of the baseball card on these guys and their games played, these guys have been durable. Last year, based on career, it was an outlier with all those injuries for so many guys. So, but look, if we can do better, we certainly will. We haven't ruled anything out. But, I mean, I would tell you that, yeah, if there's some type of bat we've explored, I don't want to get into the positions because I don't want to call out our current players, but, you know, we have looked at adding some type of bat. I can't promise that we're going to do that, but that's been part of the conversation.
Alex, you avoid arbitration with Dylan Lee and Jared Kelnick. Talk about their roles and the value to those guys on this team.
Yeah, just the arbitration process is pretty straightforward. Basically, you have, you know, assuming guys come up and stay up, you get them for 6 years. The first 3 years, they basically make the minimum or a little bit above. Clubs can basically set salaries. And then the next 3 years, you go through salary arbitration where, you know, they have a chance to get into comparisons and so on. And if both parties can't agree, you end up going to a hearing. And it's basically like going to court. You argue your case, and, you know, the player argues it, the club argues it, and at the end of the day, everyone agrees the player should get a raise. It's just you get a third party to decide what that salary is, but I don't view it as any big deal because they're still going to show up in spring training. They're still going to be on the roster. So the way the system is set up is for these guys to come to agreements and to come to terms and to get deals done. But look, Jared will come in and compete. You know, he came in. He was a platoon guy to start. Him and Adam Duvall lost their job to Ramon Laureano. Harris and Acuna will be the mainstays for sure. And then the other outfield spot, we'll see. We'll see if somebody else comes in. Trade signing and so on. So we haven't closed the door on that, but he'll have an opportunity to come in and compete. And then Dylan Lee, again, we had a crowded bullpen. He got optioned twice, but he had a great year for us. He's done a really nice job. He's really starting to emerge and having depth from the left side. Him and Aaron Bummer, I think, are going to be really important for this team. So glad to have him back, and I expect them to be important parts.
Alex Anthopoulos with us, guys. Braves general manager here on Dukes and Bell on 92.9 The Game. I know we mentioned Strider and, you know, his timeline. Are you expecting Acuna to hit the ground running? What's the realistic expectation? Do we see Acuna getting back to being MVP caliber? It's going to take a minute.
Yeah, so if you look at the injury that he had in 21, basically he had this new one, which was the other knee. He had it 6 weeks earlier. In 21, he had it at the All-Star break, middle of July. This past year, he had it third week of May. So there's already a six-week gap. And if you look at when he started a rehab assignment in the 22 season when he was coming back, I think it was April 9th. So if you went from April 9th and said, okay, well, it was 6 weeks earlier, and you move backwards, now you're basically into late February would be the equivalent of him starting a rehab assignment. We're not going to do that with him. In hindsight, as much as he felt great and the doctors cleared him, we probably should have given him more time. He was fine that year, 22, but he was an MVP dynamic Ronald Acuna. So that's why we've come out on the front end and said, look, you're not making the opening day roster. You're going to see him in spring training. He's going to be swinging. He's going to be running. He's going to be shagging. You know, we'll see if he ends up getting into games. I'd guess no. Strider will. But we just want to make sure that we take our time with him. But look, he's doing great. So just based off the previous injury, you know, if we did the exact same thing and started a rehab assignment on April the 9th, for example, that would be 6 weeks longer than he did the first time. So we haven't committed to that. Will it be 6 weeks longer, 8 weeks longer, 10 weeks longer? We'll just see how things go as we get to March, but he's doing really, really well, and he'll be back sooner than later one way or the other.
Alex, we appreciate you stopping by. We know that you pay attention to Atlanta sports. Frustrating for our Falcons. The other general manager of our team today, Terry Fontenot, spoke to the media as they closed things out for the season. Just any thoughts as we wrap up real quick about the Falcons? Because we kind of all thought that they might make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I was locked in the entire year. My son, we were in Canada for the holidays, and the Sunday night game, my 12-year-old son, we let him stay up. It was late, obviously. He was upset. And you know me, doesn't get all that fired up, but he was fired up, boy. He was crushed. I love seeing the passion, right? That's why we do this. That's why you guys have a show. We're fans. And that's why in my current job, I can't be a fan, right? Because I know too much. I know the players. I know the personalities. I like being a Hawks fan because I don't know anything. And I'm just a fan, and I get to have that outlet. But look, there's a lot of good signs going forward. But, yeah, it was tough. I mean, we're right there. Even the last game, I mean, man, that was a shootout.
I know.
But obviously the defense, even though the Bucks came back late, but we were following that game as well. We were flying back, and we were following on the plane. So it was kind of crazy. But, look, I'm excited about, obviously, Bijan's been incredible. Drake has just taken the next step as an elite guy. And, look, yeah, from a defensive standpoint, I thought the turnaround with the pass rush, first 3 weeks or 3 months or so, whatever it wasn't there, and it started to come on a little bit late. So I'm an optimist. I think they're close, and you know, they were right there this year. And look, this is, I've been here 7 years in Atlanta, and I don't know if it's like a you know, the curse since I've been here. They haven't been to the postseason, but like they were. This was the latest. You know, I'm following. This was the first time I got to follow to the last day that the games mattered, and I think they're about to kind of break through.
Right. Good stuff.
All right, man. So we should expect a little bit of stuff before pitches and catches. Hopefully, we'll talk to you about some more signings before then. Alex, thanks again.
All right, guys. Always enjoy it.
There he is, Alex Anthopoulos, Braves general manager, joining us and kind of giving you the foundation for where we are right now. Mike, things will change between now and the end of the season, but that's kind of where we are heading into spring training. I don't think too much is going to change between now and then.
No, man. I mean, he doesn't want to spend a lot of money on pitching. He's always looked for value there. And, I mean, you and I kind of rolled our eyes about Ian Anderson. Hopefully he can step up. I mean, still feeling a little light when it comes to starting pitching.
All right, coming up, the road to the college football playoff. What happened last night and what might happen tonight? Stay right there. We're talking about the college football playoff. What happened last night? It looked like Penn State was going to get it done, and they didn't. And then tonight with Ohio State and Texas, it's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike, let's recap before we look ahead. And we talked a lot about Penn State having opportunities last night, but quarterback play hurt them, and they weren't able to have any explosive plays. Throwing the ball down the field to their wide receivers, what wide receivers, was ineffective.
Right.
And, you know, there's been a lot of blame and finger-pointing today. It's the day after, obviously, Notre Dame moves on to the national championship. What did you think?
I just thought that, you know, James Franklin did nothing to change people's perception that he gets tight or his team gets tight. And, you know, team's always a reflection of their head coach late in games. And I know that it was funny. Drew Aller was just awful last night. I mean, they get off to that 10-0 lead. Notre Dame comes back, and it was kind of a game of runs. Like, Notre Dame would get on a hot streak, and then I thought the refs certainly helped Penn State, a non-holding call. Then you had that nonsense, you know, pass interference. But at the end of the game, and I got the audio, Oren queued it up for us, Carl, Drew Aller isn't doing anything. And a lot of folks said in hindsight, don't ask this guy to do anything he hasn't been able to do during the game. But Greg McElroy felt differently during the call. Take a listen.
How do they play it with 47 seconds to go? You aggressive? Or are you cautious?
I'm aggressive. I mean, I got two timeouts. I feel like the momentum's been back and forth. The quarterback, for the most part, all season long, his whole career, Drew Aller's made good decisions. He's got 50-plus touchdowns, only 9 career interceptions. He's not likely a guy that's going to put the ball in harm's way. I trust him. I think he can do it. And I would empower him in this situation to drive him down the field for a game-winning field goal.
As long as 49... hit as he throws, and it is intercepted. Christian Gray picks it off.
That's what happens. That's what happens.
Now, again, if you're going to be on TV, you're going to have strong convictions, right? But holy cow, boy, did that one just absolutely blow up. And Greg McElroy is a friend of ours. We've had him on the show a million times. But, now a lot of folks said that Greg was the exception. A lot of guys said, look, your boy hasn't done anything. Your offense has been, very pedestrian at times. So why don't you just take it to the overtime and roll the dice with your run game as opposed to just kind of the same argument against Gunnar Stockton trying to do something before the half against Notre Dame.
Yeah, I just feel like, and again, Penn State, they'll look at this game and they'll look back and go, we let this one get away from us. It's a tie ball game. You just needed to run the football, I think, Mike, and try to set your field goal kicker up. And you take this chance. And that sound bite says it all, right? That is exactly what their coach thought, but yet they hadn't done that the entire game. And it makes no sense. Read the room. Understand where my team is, where my quarterback is. If Aller was throwing the ball around the field, Mike, I'd be like, let's go. But he wasn't. He was timid, and I don't know if his confidence was where you needed it to be to do that. So let me hear Marcus Freeman, because they're going to the national championship game. They overcame a bunch of injuries, including a couple on their offensive line. This team's resilient, and maybe this is Notre Dame's year. Either way, Freeman was talking about, how they continue to fight through the injuries.
In the second half, he made some Jeremiah Love plays, and you know what? It speaks volumes to the heart he has. He gave everything he had to this place. He did not have to play today, and, nobody would have batted an eye. But he put team in front of himself and how he felt. And we got a whole bunch of guys like that in that locker room, and that's why we're in this position.
He's talking about Jeremiah Love. He's right. And that was another guy that was like, I'm playing. It doesn't matter. Freeman also talked about his kicker. His name's Mitch Jeter. He made the game-winning field goal.
Riley kept everybody under control, and we knew we're in range where Mitch could make that field goal. And he is a confident guy, man. There is no moment too big for Mitch Jeter. And I had a lot of confidence in him in that moment. He was going to do exactly what he did, and he did a great job at doing it.
So,
the story on him, Carl, is remember he came from South Carolina, got injured this year. They were one of the worst kicking teams in all of college football. But then again, he comes back from the injury, and all those isolation shots of him warming up on the sideline, can he handle it? That was not a college kicker moment, man. He stepped up.
He did. So they're in. Who will they play? That is the question. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I hope we get an entertaining game tonight. Last night's game, a little bit of a grind, right? It came down to the end, and it was great, but it wasn't like back and forth. I don't know who's going to win this game. The game was tied. I get it at the end, but there were really no kinds of wow plays. I think we're going to get that tonight, Mike, with Texas and Ohio State. What do you think about tonight?
Brother, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. It better be, because you and I are both on the over, and I just told Carl, I called my guy, put my money where my mouth is on that one. The over-under is 52. The Ohio State Buckeyes, despite that ugly loss to Michigan, have been really good against the spread. Texas has really struggled until they played Georgia. Texas was 5-1, they were 5-0, and then they played Georgia, and then things went south against the spread. I worry about Steve Sarkisian, and does he get tight? And we just talked about James Franklin, and whether it's, the team picks up on it or the way they just manage the game. Why don't they put teams away? I think the Arizona State game comes to mind, the two games with Georgia. Georgia kept giving them opportunity after opportunity when Carson Beck would turn the ball over in that first matchup in Austin, but they never seemed to be able to get on the gas. So I'm not saying Sark's going to gack it, but let me ask you, because you're a Texas fan, what does Sark change with the approach? Does he lean more on his defense? Does he lean more on his run game? What happens?
Yeah, I think it's the run game. I mean, look, I will tell you Ohio State probably is the second best defense they'll face behind Georgia, and they lost twice to Georgia this year. But you can't run the ball against Arizona State the way they did and only rack up 50 yards and say, hey, we were committed to it. They just didn't do enough in the run game, and I think that's what they're going to have to do tonight. I think they lean on their defense. Again, you're fourth or third in sacks. Mike, you have more interceptions, I think, than two other teams have more interceptions the entire season. Those are the things that have to happen for Texas. You've got to turn them over. You've got to run the ball and not say, Quinn Ewers, I need you to throw it 50 times to win, because that's not going to happen. By the way, side note to this, for those who don't know, Quinn Ewers went to Ohio State. He took a big NIL deal. He was like one of the first guys.
Right.
Okay. Stayed a semester. Then transferred back to Texas because that's where he was from, and everybody said that's where he should have went in the first place. And then, Mike, it ends up working out. But this is full circle for him tonight. He is playing a team in which, you know, he thought everybody in his life was going to be about Ohio State. And we now know in this NIL world that where you start is not where you finish. But it's sort right. of like, okay, you know what? You guys didn't even allow me to take a snap. This is some get back in a way. So I'm curious to see if he is a little amped up and plays, you know, maybe above his head tonight. But I think the defense has got to come through for the Longhorns if they're going to win this game.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, he was kind of like the first poster child, right, for yep. NIL.
Yep.
And when remember he had money. You mentioned had money out of high school. So I just feel that if not now, when for Texas, I know certainly the future is bright with everything Sark is doing recruiting wise and Arch Manning and their collective is probably the biggest in the country. And then you get back to Ohio State. I don't know why they couldn't get their superstar wide receiver involved against Michigan, but Chip Kelly has figured it out. And I know that you and I have been saying that phrase, you know, prisoner of the moment. Don't get so crazy about the the Oregon game, but it's hard not to look at the Ohio State Oregon game unless Oregon was a fugazi. Do you think that they were living? Look, remember, they won the Big Ten. They beat Ohio State and Penn State. So I still think that Ohio State victory, the complete absolute smackdown in the Rose Bowl, I mean, it's got to make you feel pretty good about your chance against Texas. Although Texas, you know, even though you're home in Jerry World, you're a 5.5 to 6 point dog, which I wonder if Sark uses that as a rallying cry.
It could be. And I don't know. This is why I say the way they have won their last two games, it's impressive. I mean, whether you like Ohio State or not, they outscored both Tennessee and Oregon by a combined score of 83-38. That you can't deny that. Like that's okay. They're clicking. And I also think for Sark, as we talk about the Longhorns and Ohio State tonight, college football playoff, we'll see who plays Notre Dame right here in our wonderful city in about a week and a half or so. I think that the game's on January 20th. But the other part for Sark is, you know, you look at this, the Ohio State. And you say, okay, there are only two teams that gave up fewer yards in Texas. Ohio State's one of them. So, Mike, are they just more of a complete team, and do they play as such as they've done in these last two games? If they do, I hate to say it, I think Ohio State wins the game. But you need those areas of your football team to step up for Sark. And you're right. If it's close, that's the other part about this. I said this when they played Georgia. I trust Kirby more than I do Sark. Kirby's been there, done it. He showed it in these big moments last night. James Franklin. Oh, well, let's just throw it. No. Let's run the ball. We've had success early. Don't get caught up. And Sark has a tendency to do that. He may do that tonight. But this is also Ryan's day moment, because if they don't win it, Mike, I don't know how Ohio State fans can continue to say, despite the fact that they've beaten these other two guys, this is where you're supposed to win for Ohio State. So I just hope we get a good game.
And the difference, I think, if you go like style makes the fight, I think last night it was the sum of its parts. I think Jeremiah Love with that like second and third effort to get the touchdown for the Irish. Jaden Greenhouse, a great house, I should say, with the move where the corner falls down, takes it to the house. But you look at like the skill positions at Penn State, their wide receivers are like, ugh. Everyone knows who Tyler Warren is. He's going to be a first-round pick as a tight end. But their wide receivers are just meh. And then tonight, you've got like rock stars at every position, at the skill positions. Jeremiah Smith, I mean, NFL fans can't wait to see this guy. You got to wait a few more years, just like Alabama. But Jeremiah Smith and Will Howard, can they connect? Why they couldn't connect against Michigan, I don't know. And the great, at the end of the day, as college football becomes the NFL, and it doesn't matter how you start, I guess you can argue that Northern Illinois and Michigan fans will have great stories to tell, and it'll be great trivia question answers. But all you're going to know is who's carrying that trophy here, you know, on MLK Day in Atlanta.
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting. And if you're just joining us, the other college football news today, it's official. Carson Beck is going to Miami. Just had a guy hit me up. He says, I don't like it for my Canes. If you live in Georgia and you watched Georgia football and you are a Hurricane fan, and this is interesting because this is what this guy is. He was like, look, I watch these Georgia games. I'm following my team. I don't know if he makes us better than what we were this year. You're supposed to try to upgrade. And I said this, Mike, I don't think he's better than Cam Ward. Now, he can prove me wrong, but I don't think he's better.
Right. No, I think we did that poll. Remember, we joked around back in like October, November. It was basically 50-50 that Georgia fans still didn't trust Carson Beck. And look, he did some screwy stuff. I don't think Bobo helps him. But that Alabama game, the first half against Texas, did everything in his part to give that game back. Now, granted, in the Alabama game, he came on like a house of fire. But I think NFL scouts were looking at him kind of like lukewarm, second round tops. So he's got a chance to go to Miami. He's going to make the same money, apparently, he was making through NIL, $4 million. Based on the guesstimates, and be close to that smoke show girlfriend of his, and then maybe throws for 35-40 touchdowns and gets himself into the first round, maybe the first half of the first round, because this is 26. You know, here's the thing. The worst thing for Carson Beck is the injury, because this is still a really weak quarterback class. You get outside of Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, and then all of a sudden teams, it kind of reminds you like E.J. Manuel or the Christian Ponder years, where teams took a quarterback hoping he'd be the guy when he wasn't. But I'm with you. And by the way, Rusty Manziel, our buddy, just tweeted out, Dalen Everett. Remember we mentioned all the safeties and the depth in the safeties are leaving? Well, they still got one of their best corners, the MVP of the SEC Championship game. Dalen Everett has announced he will return for Georgia in 2025. So that's good for Kirby and Co.
No, no doubt. We got more to get to, guys. 6 o'clock hour straight ahead. Our conversation with Brian McFadden as we look ahead to the wild card weekend and give you the rundown on all of these games. We got a lot of sports coming up this weekend. And it's great because I'm at home and there's snow on the ground. It's awesome. Hey, we'll come back. 6 o'clock hour here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.